So it's a couple minutes after the hour. I think we'll try to get started. My name is Ben Feinman with Internet2. I'm the manager of the Internet2 Commons, and I have a focus here on video and collaboration technologies. As a little background, we're forming this group in response to a perceived need that's kind of risen up in the community over the past weeks and months, and most recently on the mega conference list in the form of an active discussion on dial plan and related topics. So at least initially, the focus of this group, I'm thinking, will be talking through the dial plan issues that our community faces and current schemes that are available, the advantages and disadvantages of said schemes, and how we might move forward to a better unified solution for our entire community. So to get started, I was hoping that we could go around and do a roll call to see who's on the call, and if you want to say not only your name, but where you're coming in from, and what you would like to see coming out of this group, that would be interesting to me at least. If we want to start from the West Coast, Pacific time zone, and work our way east, we can try to do it that way. So who's on the West Coast?
Well, that would probably be me, because I'm farther than the Pacific time zone. I'm Scott Hipsack over at GCI up here in Anchorage, Alaska. So I'm an hour behind Pacific. So unless there's somebody from Hawaii who's got me beat, I'm usually the farthest west over. So you guys might have all seen me on the posts beating up Steve. So in a good way.
Thank you, Scott. So yeah, I think he probably is the furthest west in the U.S. at least. Do we have anybody that is in the Pacific time zone? So, moving on to Mountain. And moving on to Central.
This is Lance Cunningham, University of Minnesota. I also have Matt Carner and off-screen Mike Grady, two of my staff that work on video conferencing issues. Matt's actually only been here about a week and a half. Again, I'm antiquated, so this is good timing, and we're really interested in doing as much neighboring and share dial plan and directories as much as possible. We're, over the next couple months, really working on putting together a new infrastructure for video conferencing support here at the U of M.
Great. Thank you. Nelson Central.
Hi. I'm Nelson Central. My name is Sheila Sisko. I'm at Fermilab in Batavia, Illinois. We're a high-energy research from a subcontractor of the Department of Energy. And I'm also the video conferencing coordinator here, but I'm also the chair of a working group that is made up of technical staff and users that advise the ESnet collaboration services. So my interest is observatory to see what plans are. However, there is interest in making sure that we continue to interoperate and collaborate with other folks around the world, since the Large Hadron Collider experiment has cranked up in Switzerland. And so there's lots of work going on around the world that we need to make sure that ESnet is still using the latest plan or whatever comes out of this. So thank you very much for organizing this, Ben.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining us. Anyone else in Central?
Charles Ganshorn, corporate consulting engineer with Cisco Systems. I'm out of Minnesota in Minneapolis.
Great. Thank you for joining us, Charles.
Alyssa Zamaripa with the Texas Education Telecommunications Network in Austin.
Great, thank you. And it looks like maybe moving on to the Eastern time zone.
Well, hello all. This is Bob Dixon. I'm at Ornet. And I guess my concerns are I've been in this a long time. You know, it's just the beginning of GDS, so I have those issues, and my concerns are that we can't operate in a vacuum. You know, the Europeans, people are working on various things, and so whatever we do, it has to be in an organized way, and then we also have to realize whatever we do, it has to be in a transitional way where the old is kept working for a long time together with the new so that people don't get disenfranchised.
Thank you, Bob. I'm glad you can join us.
Hi, I'm Mike Hyde. I'm from Penn State University, and I've been around video conferencing for quite a while, working with Bob back in the late 90s. And what we're looking towards is how we migrate towards the future where we can actually eliminate the GDS-based dialing scheme from the user interface and push it back into a portal behind the scenes and give the users a more web-based interface using their local authentication and then inter-institutional shibboleth type things to make the interfaces easier for the use.
Interesting. Thank you.
I'm Gabe Moulton. I'm at Ohio State University. I have Robbie Noble, a student employee here, and we are parts of the operational end of the Commons. And to give Ben a hard time, I'm here to figure out what he's getting me into.
And I think that's fair, Gabe.
Might want to swing over to this side, Lori.
So I'll jump in. I'm Mike LaHaye. I'm with Internet 2, Director of Technical Services. Been around video conferencing and dial schemes for a long time. Glad that Internet 2 can step up here and hopefully provide a little bit of a framework to drive toward some sort of a direction for the entire community on this really important space.
While we're in the room, why don't you go, Lori?
Lori Kirkmeyer from Merit Network. I run the video conferencing services or video services at Merit, and I'm very interested in this topic. A lot of folks in Michigan are actively, certainly Janine Lim is in Michigan, and is she on the call? Do you know? Is Janine on the call? Don't know. So anyway, she was one of the people on the list a couple of weeks ago who was talking very much about the complexities of dialing. Anyway, fascinated to hear what's going to happen.
So. Anyone else in Eastern?
Yeah, Ben, this is Steve Kirk from Avaya.
Steve, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you.
I think there's somebody else, maybe?
Hello, this is Adam Dobucky from Johns Hopkins University. I'm on this call because I watched the threads go through, and I'm just kind of interested to see where this is going to go.
I think that's fair. So leaving the United States, do we have any international participants?
They're all
asleep.
They're all in the pub.
Yeah. And is there anybody else that we missed that we didn't hear from in the roll call?
Well, I can tell you that Ken Fox is also here. He signed up for the group.
Thank you. Yep.
Ken, this is Ben Roy. I'm from the University of Washington, and I'm in the Pacific time zone.
What was your name again?
Ben Roy.
Ben Roy. Okay. Welcome, Ben. All right. Well, I guess that's everyone. With that, we can go ahead and get started. My thought for this call was that we could start by discussing the current challenges that we're facing with the dial plans that we're currently using, and others can jump in with ideas of how we might do things in a better way, because I know there's a lot of ideas out there.
It would be interesting to do a quick poll and see how people dialed in.
Yes, how many used the GDS number versus the IP dialing?
GDS.
I did, GDS, just for an experiment. Just to, you know, next time I'll do it straight by IP, whichever.
I use GDS in calling in.
Okay. Any IP? Any IP?
Penn State IP.
Okay.
U of M, Minnesota, IP.
Okay.
Johns Hopkins IP.
Equal.
So the IP users, do your institutions not use GDS? And if so, why not?
You look like less digits to dial the IP address.
That's fair.
Good answer.
We can't give them the option then next time.
Idle curiosity
well,
on the U of M.
Well, this endpoint is a test one, so we don't even have it registered to an official CDS gatekeeper, so it would have not worked.
Ah, there we go. I was curious about that because the state network, I know they can dial by GDS, and I was just curious how come you guys didn't.
That would be why.
So I know GDS has been the most recent initiative to unify dialing in our community, but it has failed to achieve success, is I guess how I'll put it.
Or more to the point, has failed to achieve penetration.
Critical mass. Yeah.
Right, critical
yep.
mass is probably
yep.
the better way to put it. And so I was hoping people might comment on why they think that is the case. What are the challenges that are keeping people from adopting GDS?
I'm going to jump right in and say that, one, there's no web page for it anymore. The only thing you can find out is the wiki page. So it's very difficult to get a hold of the North American Root guys. I have a good working relationship with Nick Thompson, but that goes, you know, I know about GDS from 4 or 5 years ago and hunted down the information and work through it that way. But that's primarily it. The second part, I think, is a sales and marketing, if sales and marketing makes sense. We got to get it out there. We got to tell the community as a whole and the vendors, you know, Polycom, Cisco, Tamberg, they've got to know about GDS, and they've got to be able to articulate why you need a dial plan. And, you know, Tamberg's good at that. I'll give them that they want everybody to move to a dial plan. Their equipment supports it. But Polycom, they could go either way. They don't really care. You know, Cisco, they don't really care either from a big corporation. So I think it's a sales and marketing as well as a need the information, need to put it in that form that people can, yeah, this is cool. This is why I want to buy it. Or this is why I want to use GDS. So that's my 2 cents worth.
Yeah, that's a great comment, and let's go there. Why should people use GDS? What's the real benefit versus dialing by IP when, in fact, you often end up dialing more numbers?
Because just as you can take websites and load balance them by domain name, you're basically doing application-based routing there where you decide to take somebody to the closest instantiation of a web page so that they're not going cross-country when there's actually an instance of it directly. And that's all done by virtue of using a name, a variable, if you will, rather than direct addressing. And that's all that's what makes that possible. Likewise, the direct IP routing path of a call may or may not have anything at all to do with the way the call control plane has to route the call in order to make it successful.
So what I hear you saying is that you want to abstract the application from the network layer, which is exactly what I need to do in my network.
Right, right.
So prime example that actually this discussion hit right on the money, I'm dealing with the customer. So in Alaska, this may not apply to everybody, but I'm a service provider, and I have competing entities, literally competing hospitals and medical organizations, so I have a HIPAA compliancy issue, who have backdoor circuits, and I say backdoor because they're behind their firewall, so private circuits between everybody that are not publicly available per se on from within the medical MeetMe network, but they are publicly available from other locations. So we could route down to Seattle and back up, or we could go across town on a piece of fiber. Obviously, we prefer to go across town on a piece of fiber, so we need to abstract the IP dialing or the network dialing from the network. And case in point, I have a customer who's over satellite. We have two connections to him. If you dial by IP, the way the equipment's set up, it sends it back down to Anchorage. But if you unregister from the gatekeeper, it will dial by IP backwards. So now we need to get everybody on a common dial plan, competing entities no less, that don't talk to each other and do not want to talk to each other, to dial and get along so that our doctors can move from one hospital to another hospital to another clinic to another hospital, but yet dial the same numbers to get to those locations. And that is a huge thing, and we're having to sell that to our, one, our customers, and two, the competing entities. And for me, it's extremely important that everybody be able to dial. Otherwise, I'm stuck in the middle being the guy doing the switch cord. You know, okay, you can connect to my bridge, I can connect to your bridge. Great, well, now I'm using up my resources for something that could just be a point-to-point call. So that's where I see this as significant in my network. The connectivity portion and the automation portion is important to me as well. But, you know, ease of use for the end user is another huge issue. That doctor, give him a number, he picks up the remote, dials that number, and it works every time, no matter what. That's what I want, and that's what I'm shooting for.
So do we think that that's an achievable result using GDS?
It's uniquely achievable with GDS because it's the only thing. Dial digits are what anything can dial, regardless of protocol, regardless of vintage, versus, you know, URI strings and things like that. Because of different vintages of endpoints and different implementations of different vendors, there's, and then, you know, there's just no guarantee, one, whether or not it can even be dialed, and secondly, what's the behavior of the endpoint for a given string when you dial it, and that varies from endpoint to endpoint to vintage, and even, as was pointed out on the list, gatekeeper to gatekeeper, gatekeeper registered or not gatekeeper registered. So there's just a lot of variance, but you dial digits, and the lookup mechanism is well-defined.
Yes, it is, and I second that 100%.
So is there anyone on the call that would suggest a solution other than GDS?
The only thing coming down the pike, and GDS, you know, provided you can get, I think the biggest problem with GDS in academia has been lack of adoption. And I think, was that Scott that was saying about the web pages being stale? Yeah, so that's, you know, absolutely true. I mean, I had doubted over the last couple of years whether GDS was really still in force. You saw people, references to people using it. But, yeah, like you say, when you search for information, it's all incredibly stale and no indication of whether this is a going concern or not yet. So, and then there was some talk once upon a time about things going exclusively to a directory lookup as opposed to GDS. So there's, you know, I think the lack of penetration has to do with, like you said, you know, how stale the information is, and then rumors that, you know, it was going away. In terms of other alternative dial plans, well, I've been, you know, trying to hawk GDS with enterprises for years now, you know, because it was the only thing out there that would let me define an internet-based path for video, but they're just a little queasy, you know, for things like this. I mean, they go look at the information and it's stale and it's all academia, and then plus it doesn't necessarily mesh all that well with the actual E164 dial plan that runs telephony, and enterprises are all about, you know, making the telephony work, and if video happens to work, well, you know, hey, that's cool, but it's not job one. And so they're not going to skew their dial plans around something that is, from their point of view, a bit of a niche. So that's where I threw it on the list, this, you know, recognizing that there's no agreed upon dial plan route for everybody out in the world. That's this whole idea of the IME thing that we're suggesting, that you can use the E164 dial plan and still get IP connections based on being able to discover them. Now, the downside, of course, is that IME is brand spanking new from us, and for the moment, it's just from us, and it's not standardized yet. We intend it to be standardized, but it's awfully dang early for that in a number of dimensions. But that's just something that might come to fruition, where we can actually use E164 addressing and still be able to get an IP path out of it.
Well, one thing that we associated with the Commons have clearly been negligent in keeping the website up to date and making it correct. We have relied on basically teaching workshops to do site coordinators when we talk about GDS and how it works and all that. But clearly, I think regardless of whatever else we do, we have to update the website, because people are going to use GDS for the near future in any case.
I would suggest when we update the website that we list, if at all possible, and I understand there's maybe some privacy concerns and or secure, I won't say security, but issues of being in a directory, that that if you want to be published, then you'd be published with your prefix. Say, yeah, Penn State is on this one. Here's my, you know, GCI's customers of, you know, here's GCI. That's their prefix. And list them. And then you can kind of see who is joining and build that critical mass. Again, the marketing aspect of this. The look, we have 10,000 people on GDS that you can connect to. You know, that kind of deal. You can search for them and things of that nature. And there's directories.
Well, you might not even actually need a directory, just a list of how many people at an institution are on there. And because, I mean, people hook up to the telephone network and they have thousands of people connected, yet there's not necessarily directory listings out there in the public for everybody that has an extension. Yet if you happen to know their extension, you can call them. So, you know, people might be queasy about having a directory listed as that being, you know, some kind of gating factor for getting in. But if you at least mentioned, like, how many working extensions there are on a given prefix, even that might help establish critical mass.
Absolutely. In the medical environment, listing prefixes would be probably a bad idea. Not prefixes, but extensions would be a bad idea, because some of the systems are set to auto-answer and they are in clinical settings, and that's a no-no. Not going to happen. So I know some of my organizations don't even want to be listed in GDS, because they don't want to be dialed accidentally. Now, that's just a fear and security thing, understood, perception thing, yes, but that's their perception, and we're working to move away from that. But regardless, that may run into that in the medical community.
Well, now, you know, there was a directory. In fact, there have been several of different people who have attempted at different times. You know, but the one that you're probably referring to was started by the folks at B-Day in North Carolina specifically. And the trouble is, you know, people move on, and then there wasn't anybody to maintain it or keep it going and so on. So it takes a significant amount of effort to keep up a directory.
Well, I think the problem with that is it was just an entirely central directory. In order for a directory system to work like that, work properly, I think you need to have localized control, that local administrators, you know, control the directory for their institution, and that's shared in a tiered fashion with other institutions.
I wonder if somebody could comment on the integration with SIP. I'm not real familiar with the guts of GDS and how that would work. As we're looking at desktops, we see that most of those clients are headed towards SIP as the main protocol, and how we integrate, you know, dialing between SIP to SIP and SIP to HV23 endpoints through GDS, if that's possible today, or that it requires more gateways, or how what's the plan there?
Well, there is no dial plan for SIP, you know, certainly, and GDS does not accommodate SIP. That was discussed at some Internet 2 meeting long ago, and I forget who now said, well, that probably is inappropriate to consider using GGS for SIP, and if we move to SIP, we probably need to do something else, which is what we're talking about here. But I'm surprised when you say a lot of people are using SIP, because I don't see that very much.
Yeah, I don't think we're seeing it as end users, Bob, but we're just doing, you know, research and development kind of activities, and a lot of the desktop-type products that we're looking at least, they are SIP-based.
By the way, it's great to see you, Mike.
Yeah, you too. So that's really kind of where we're looking at is we want to go to more of a person-to-person dialing kind of environment for the users where they dial based on person. So if I want to dial Bob, I just enter into my client, bob@osu.edu, and then on his end, he's told his proxy where he's going to be and what system I'm to connect to. I don't need to know that. I just need to know Bob. And Bob has specified in his system that it's okay for me to call him. And it will allow the call to go through to wherever he decides he wants to answer it from.
Well, but see, here we have the fundamental problem somebody mentioned already. If you have a keyboard, that's fine to dial bob@osu.edu, but if you're sitting here with a remote control or something like that, you know, or you don't have a keyboard, then you have a real problem.
Yeah, that's definitely an issue. You know, with the desktops, obviously it's not a problem for the room systems. We're looking at a way to create a proxy server on the back end so that a user could, you know, quote-unquote, log into a room system, and then they would specify their dialing destination through their web browser, which would then go to the machine that would actually tell the endpoint where to go, versus dialing directly from the remote control.
So for what it's worth, in our architectures, and I think that the Tanberg gatekeeper can do this as well, SIP or not SIP is just a matter of dial plan. You know, this entity, this directory number, is registered to an entity that's talking a certain protocol or not. And by virtue of a call control plane that can talk the appropriate control signaling one endpoint to the other, I don't have to know that I'm dialing SIP to 323 or SIP to whatever. I just dial a number, and the call control plane deals with getting me the right connection. And if that includes going across a 323 to SIP boundary, that's completely hidden from the user. And he dials digits no matter what. And that's how we make that work.
I'd agree completely, except for one thing. We don't want to dial digits in the cases where it's, users can do it. You're liking to dial names at domain versus digits.
But, okay,
right.
So I understand
what
that everybody likes the idea of URIs, but I'm saying that is a fundamental problem for creating a dial plan that's going to be uniform for everybody across the whole environment.
Yes, it would require us to take our endpoints and give them names in the domain system. So, you know, I'd be room 119 at psu.edu or something like that if I wanted to go to an endpoint-based dialing scheme using URI-type things. Versus a person dialing scheme.
I disagree, because if you look at the Polycom CMA, you can dial by number and or by name. So I think that both are fully compatible. So if an endpoint such as a old View Station 128 that can pretty much do numbers could dial GDS numbers, as long as that SIP endpoint, be it the SIP client, registers to a device, and then the infrastructure understands how to get to that device, I think it should be completely abstracted from the user. You know, in desktop clients, in that case, specifically speaking of Tanberg, I'm not sure if their endpoints can register two or three or four variables to the gatekeeper, but I know the Polycom CMA can, because you can dial, you know, Bob at XXX, or you can dial their number, and it works either way. So, and in some cases, I think the users may prefer to dial their phone number because the phone number on their SIP client matches to their phone number on their desk. Is that good or bad? Don't know. But if the user knows the phone number that of the person they're trying to call, it works. And that's a fully functional dial plan. We didn't have to retrain our users. And it's SIP and it's 323. So which one is better? I don't know, but I think they're fully compatible given the if the infrastructure is there.
So is that an issue that we really need to tackle as a community, is the interoperability of all of this across 323 and SIP, E164, GDS, I mean, is that something we could or should take on here? And underneath all of that is this concept of a consistent dial plan. Number of digits, escape sequences, all of that comes into play there. But do we need to deal with the interoperability?
Yes, that's my opinion.
Well, see, at least for our designs, it's a matter of trunking. So I trunk you, and I say that if you go this way, you can get to this range of digits. And the call control plane running those digits then will talk the appropriate protocol on the trunk, whatever the trunk was defined as from the incoming caller. And then if the outbound call for the actual destination is some other protocol, then it speaks that protocol to the endpoint in question. So the caller, and not even the caller, doesn't have to know, and there might be, you might have three different legs of protocol, right? You might have one protocol on the caller, another protocol on the trunk, and a completely different protocol on the receiver. And all of that is mapped through dial plan and call control plane.
And for every user, they're using E164, and it simply looks like a 10-digit number?
Yeah, it's certainly an enterprise network, yes. It's just all E164 dialing.
Well, I'm talking in this community.
In this community, it would be the GDS strings.
Yeah, the dial plan part is going to be difficult because I have a lot of users out there that are doing 5-digit dialing in their inside network, and I throw the GDS prefix in front of them. So now these organizations are separate through a third-party entity to be prefixed. I didn't have to change their internal networks. So in that respect, maybe there's some recommended standards out there that need to be developed and/or published.
Well, I kind of did that at the state of Minnesota. They had assigned 10-digit E164s to all of their endpoints, and they had made them so that they were going to all be potentially DIDable numbers. And then when they call among themselves, they're using the 10 digits, and when they go out into the world for GDS at the border controller, we did a little thing where we pop and push the GDS prefix on the string. So somebody calling GDS adds the GDS prefix for the state of Minnesota, the 10 digits of their actual destination endpoint, and when that comes to the edge of their network, you pop the prefix, and now you ask a 10-digit question to their internal dial plan, which makes sense to their internal dial plan, and likewise, so that the caller IDs work properly on the way out. On the way out, you push the GDS prefix onto it so that the person being called has the full number of the person of their caller, despite the fact that the original caller's endpoint didn't actually have the full GDS prefix actually defined on it.
So what I think I just heard, Charles, is dial 9 to get out. Is that correct?
Well, in their case, the full GDS prefix. They dial the full GDS prefix to get out.
So if we're dialing...
Well, you're right. We probably could have done
9,
it that way.
Well, I'm thinking of a dial plan that would actually accommodate all of these protocols, and that we didn't have a prefix for GDS and a prefix for the PSTN world and a prefix for the SIP world. Is there a way to build a dial plan that might actually accommodate everything in a way that's really transparent to the users, and they're always dialing a 10 or 11 digit string?
There would have been had enum happened. That's unfortunate, but unfortunately that's and what's now referred to as end user enum is not going to happen. So, you know, the IETF came up with enum, ITU adopted enum pretty much in toto and said, yeah, that's how you should map E164 addresses to the URI that would actually accept that call. And then, of course, the ITU carves up the E164 address space and gives country codes to different of the nation states in the world. And then the nation states, according to their local laws, decide how they want to actually implement the country code. And in most cases, that means some PTT, and here it's, you know, the whole environment of the voice service providers and then Telecordia running the number portability database. they all got together and tried to look at whether or not, you know, they were supposed to open up, you know, implement Enum, and decided that they couldn't figure out a business model that made sense for them to do that. And so they've just decided not to do it. And unfortunately, no one inside of the U.S. government or any place is pushing them to make it happen. So by treaty, by, you know, negotiation, and by law, the guys that were supposed to build that database simply aren't going to do it. And no one's, you know, pushing the case to make them do it. So the route that would have made that possible isn't going to exist, at least not out publicly accessible for users to have. Hence the harebrained scheme of IME to still have numbers that have been legitimized by the actual number issuing authorities, which would be Telecordia and the voice networks, yet still be able to discover a path across the internet between those numbers so I can do something besides a voice call.
I'm going to jump in and say that I don't know if a 10-digit dial plan is even possible, because even with some of my, well, I'll just take the SS7 network and then the PSTN network, where, you know, you have number portability. You know, you can move a number, for example, your last four digits may be 1001, and the next guy's 1002, and they're on completely separate competing PSTN networks, but you still have to route between them. The technology for the gatekeeping is not there yet. We cannot share numbers in that respect. We cannot just say 1001 goes to this network over here and controlled by this gatekeeper, and 1002 is controlled over here. You have to have some kind of segmented plan and gatekeepers and number pattern matching. Otherwise, you've got to share all that information, and you've got to have a database lookup for every single number out there. So you really have to start breaking it into chunks for the current gatekeepers. And I don't know if that's possible unless we just all of a sudden all got together at the federal government, said this is the way you're all going to do it. And I don't think a lot of us want the feds to come down and say this is the way you're going to do gatekeeping and dialing. So in that respect, I think that, you know, we need some strongly recommended best practices, maybe. Here, if you want to integrate with your voice over IP phone, here's how we recommend doing it. You know, here's how other people do it. If you don't want to integrate with your PSTN voice over IP phone system, here's how we recommend doing it. Here's how GDS does it, you know, like the pop and push with the prefixes, that kind of, just don't know if we can get a concise 10-digit thing. We can get numbers. If we can get numbers and we can get them consistent, regardless of the string length, I think that it would work. I think it would gain critical mass. Sorry.
So maybe it's more than 10 digits, and I shouldn't have said that, but I guess what I'm looking for is a consistent method for the end user to place a call that doesn't change, and that they don't have to know if they're using 323 or SIP or VoIP or something else. And I think that's critical for us to figure out for the users if we can.
Well, you
that's kind of the philosophy we've taken at Penn State. The users know people, and they kind of know where they're at. So whether it's SIP or some other protocol, we want the user to be able to do all their communication with other people by using the person. So it's some person that I know. And then the network does all the routing behind the scenes to figure out where this person's at. And if it's using GDS, fine. If it's using SIP, fine. The user doesn't really care. They just know, oh, I want to talk to Bob at Ohio State. And they can specify that somehow. And, you know, and then behind the scenes, whatever protocol has to happen, it does it. No numbers involved. It's just people or places.
Well, I was reacting to Mike's,
to generalize GDS to allow alphanumeric characters in addition to just numbers? And, I mean, can the gatekeepers handle that?
No. Anytime you throw in something besides digits, then now you end up with a lookup problem. But now I was reacting to Mike's comment about, is there a way to get this to a 10-digit string, and that's consistent all the time? And that's why I went into that whole thing about, you know, looking up E164 numbers. Now, if you accept that when I dial GDS versus when I dial across the PSTN, that the number string length, the length of the string will be different, then there's really no problem, right? Because anything that's the 10-digit string is going to head towards the PSTN. Anything that's got the GDS prefix can go ahead and go out to the GDS gatekeeper. You could even do this within the context of a single dial plan within an enterprise. I mean, that would not be a hard, you know, dial plan routing problem to do. But if you want it to be a 10-digit string, regardless of whether I'm going across the PSTN or across the Internet, then one way or another, that 10-digit string has to be E164. And like I say, that's where that whole thing came from. But if you're okay with the difference in string length, then there's no problem with having video endpoints that are part of your internal dial plan that can call anything that's E164 based, but yet when it calls across the Internet uses a GDS prefix, and that's what tells the call routing to go out towards GDS and ask the question about that number.
There's a further example of how we do it here at Penn State, at least what we're trying to work towards, is we have, you know, a traditional voice over IP system here. You use this phone numbers, trunking, and all the standard kind of stuff. And then we have another project, kind of a sister product to that system, which is right now is a SIP-based, we call it soft phone, where basically you run a SIP client on your PC to call other people. And on the SIP side of the house, there are no numbers. So you cannot dial a person by number on that side in that system. We did that intentionally. You have to dial them by user at pennstate.edu, psu.edu, or if you've set up an alias in your shortcut list. So we intentionally did that. They cannot dial by number.
But why is that a good thing?
Because users aren't good at remembering numbers, but they are good at remembering people.
But now, can they call across the divide?
Every day using numbers, though.
Sorry, I got a couple echoes there.
No, I was just saying we call each other every day using phone numbers. So I mean.
Well, we put each other in our cell phones, and we put a name associated with that right away, and then we push the call Steve or call Bob. We don't enter in the number usually. You know, at some point. Especially when numbers get this long. So I have regular phone numbers I have to remember, and I have DDS numbers I have to remember. You know, people just aren't good at numbers. They're used to using user at domain for email communications or other types of collaboration. So if you could duplicate that identity, so yeah, a person has an identity on the network, irregardless of the type of service you're trying to connect to them with, you use the same identity. And then the network figures out, based on what you've told it, what do you want to do? I want to call him audio only. I want to call him video. I want to collaborate with him. I want to, you know, whatever I want to do. But it's still identify it by, I want to go to that person and do something.
So that really
should
gives
be
us
the same identifier for the person.
But now, didn't you create a division between
the
SIP people and the not SIP people?
Sorry, I didn't hear any.
Didn't you create a division now between the SIP people and the not SIP people? I mean, they can't call across the boundary, right?
Right, and that's in the early phases. That's intentional. Yes.
But why is
that
a good thing?
We view the phone numbers as external legacy kinds of systems, and obviously eventually we'll provide a mechanism for people who are on devices that can only dial digits to be able to talk to those people. But the way the call would flow is if they dialed a traditional PSTN-type number, it would use E164 lookup, and it would convert that into their Penn State ID and then place the call that way. But between SIP-enabled clients, it would be person-to-person dialing only. And then the external, if that person needs to dial external off the network, you know, eventually we'll provide them a mechanism to dial those endpoints that can't be identified as a person, since not everybody's using the same protocol. You can't do that. But certainly within our domain, we can control that. And we could within Internet, too, also, since we all obviously have unique domain names and unique user IDs within each of our domains.
So is it your goal to take this in the direction of presence at Penn State? Is that really what you're doing? I mean, make this almost like an extension of IM?
It kind of all rolls into that same flavor of application, yes. I think so. So it's all about communication and people. You know, that's kind of where we're dancing around the edges of. And, yeah, you're right. All that stuff just starts to flow together when you start talking about this kind of thing.
It certainly does if you're sitting at a screen with a keyboard. And that's maybe one of the challenges here. I don't know. But I certainly agree with your assertion. I mean, I've stopped remembering numbers since I moved to cell phones, right? I mean, everything just it's looking it up in the directory. And anymore, if I don't know somebody's phone number, it's a Google query to get the number and push the button on the screen. I don't dial numbers very often anymore, and I rather enjoy that.
Actually, you just don't overtly dial numbers anymore. You always dial numbers.
I've been abstracted from it.
Yeah. That's way different than defining an architecture where you don't have a dial digit way to get to somebody.
Completely agree. So there's a dial plan underlying all of this, and that still needs to be well defined here. But it starts, you know, getting us out of the is it 10 digits, is it 14 digits discussion. And if we can abstract it up to a higher level, a higher level of abstraction, it's interesting. I don't think as a solution for today, but maybe as a goal for helping to define direction for this group.
Yeah, I mean, I agree completely. What we're trying to do, we know, is not capable today. I mean, that's kind of, we're in a research and development kind of mode, and we just want to find other people who may be interested in working towards that. And, you know, behind the scenes, if we're using 10-digit numbers, 20-digit numbers, we really don't care. It's just the idea that we don't want the users to have to deal with that. And then that also gives us the flexibility in the future. We decide, well, that type of dialing plan, we want to switch it out, do something more efficient. The users don't need to know about that, don't have to change their behavior. It's always the same that they've always done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, as was pointed out earlier, you could have built it such that all of the SIP entities, in fact, had a number that was reachable from the dial digit side of the world and still have their SIP ID to call natively between each other. And so you could have had both. You could have had, you know, interoperability between SIP and not SIP, and the ability to dial names.
Yeah. We made a conscious choice not to do that. We know we could do it. We made a conscious choice not to, just to kind of get users used to the idea that, oh, I can dial by person. But certainly, you know, everybody at Penn State has a 10-digit phone number or some number that's kind of associated with their department or some way to get to them. And in the future, depending on how it rolls out, we may then enable that number to be a pointer to that person. We'd like to give them the flexibility to say, okay, if somebody dials this number, I don't necessarily want it to physically dial or ring this device. I want to be able to specify through my registrar, hey, you know, if somebody dialed this unique identifier for me, I'm over here today. Ring me over here. I'm on my laptop. No, today I'm here on this SIT phone. No, today I'm at home. And the person calling doesn't need to know that, and it gives the end user the flexibility to specify it however they want. And that'll be true whether they're dialing by 10 digits or by, you know, user at domain. I still want that flexibility as a receiver to decide where the call routes. And the calling party doesn't need to know that.
My other concern would be dialing plans associated with bridges, with MCUs. So you have this concept when you say of calling each other by a username. For us, that's a very small part of what people are doing right now because we don't have any unified communications or SIP-based that mindset per se. But it's the idea of getting to somebody else's EU and what's their dial plan. So consequently, you can either have, you know, a GDS number or depending on the dial plan of that particular service, then you've got something else completely different too. There's still that concept of multipoint too that I'm concerned about.
Yeah, but now a multi-point conference shouldn't be any different than anything else.
No, it shouldn't be any different. Like today's conference would be whatever you called it there, Ben, AVCI. So the AVCI Internet 2.edu, I just dial that, and it figures out, oh, that's a bridge conference. I'll connect you to the bridge, and I don't need to know that it's a bridge conference. I don't necessarily care that it's a bridge conference. Or I could just dial Ben's number, and Ben has told the proxy that, hey, if anybody dials me, connect them to this conference over here. And I don't need to know that. I just need to call Bennett, too, and it'll get me into his conference.
So what I'm hearing is I think that we should probably pressure the manufacturers to put keyboards on endpoints, is what I'm hearing. Because I've asked for it. I think you all know that. And so going from there, I think that's probably pretty important. Because I think SIP is the long run, yes, probably the way to go. But we do need interop. We do need to worry about the old style endpoints and things of that nature. So.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, we view it as, you know, right now we're predominant in the room system. So we have 210 room systems, but we have 70,000 people with PCs. Right now, there's only maybe 100 people with those PCs using desktop video conferencing. Now, in the future, that could go, we could have 30 or 40,000 people. So then it shifts. It's like, okay, we're not going to base the system for the future off of the limitations of what we have in the room systems today. You know, if we need to, we'll find a way to either convert those numbers through a proxy or to give the user a web-based interface to the control of that room system, and then they would kind of look the same to them as if they were dialing their client on their PC, and they wouldn't really have to worry that it's the room system versus a desktop versus some other type of thing. But, yeah, you're right. That, you know, the way the room systems are today, it's difficult to abstract away that interface. You have to actually develop something.
Well, now, some people would say some of those things exist. Like, there typically is a web interface in most endpoints, but it's not anything you'd ever want to use for general purpose use. I mean, it's primarily for system control and that sort of stuff. And someone could say, well, you can bring up a keyboard on your screen. Yes, that's possible, but it's horrible to try and use. Then you have to try and use arrow keys and go around. It's just totally unusable. And so if somebody added to the web interface in an endpoint a simple keyboard that, or some way that you could just easily do it, I think that would be great.
Yeah. I think, Bob, I think the UI could get around it. I think, honestly, if there was a keyboard that was there and you just popped it up, hit a big green button like on the Polycom remotes or the big green one on the Tamberg, and you know it was on the keyboard and said, hit this, and it popped up your screen and you just started typing, I think that would work beautifully. I think it would truly be an elegant solution to dial SIP, to dial URI. Something that simple would make a, in my opinion, would make a significant difference. Now, this is for a lot of different reasons. My conference room would use it. However, in a medical situation, maybe not. Maybe they have the remote literally tethered, in some cases, tethered and or hidden or locked up in a cabinet due to behavioral health issues. So there may not be any objects in the room. These types of things we'd have to potentially overcome, but I don't think that's for here now, but I think I think keyboards would make a huge difference in room conferencing systems. Or the ability to get one. I don't want to give people access to the web interface per se. They may not have a laptop. They may not have a computer in their room. Who knows? These are, I'm just trying to think of a way to say, this is it. So, and it can work with touch panels as well. If you have an integrated room system, touch panels would also work.
We have a few with AMX systems in, you know, where we can do that, but it's quite expensive, as you probably already know, to do that kind of integration.
So we have about 5 minutes left, and this has been a lot of good discussion, and I think it's clear that this is a good group to convene, and that together we can work towards some goals. Those goals, as I see them right now, are in terms of dial plan and related topics, are developing a set of best practices for our community, and figuring out where we want our community to end up such that we can frame the best practices in a way that makes us end up in the place that we want to end up. So to continue this discussion, my goal is to formalize this into a special interest group. I'm thinking that a biweekly meeting would be appropriate, at least for now. I'm working on getting a wiki page set up on the Internet 2 wiki space, and I'm hoping that with that tool we can work together to, generate kind of a dictionary of all the things that we're talking about to start, but also start hashing things out in terms of best practices and things like that on the wiki. I'm also planning to have a face-to-face for this group at the Internet 2 spring member meeting for those of you that are able to attend that. But for now, I will hope to see you on the next meeting, which will be in about 2 weeks. We'll have to figure out what a more permanent time slot will look like.
Thanks for pulling us together, Ben.
Yep, thank you. Appreciate it.
Active and open, and we can continue this discussion via email. Terry Saarinen has been graciously taking notes for us, so I will distribute notes after the call is concluded. And Gabe and Robbie have enabled us to record the meeting, so we will distribute the video archive when we're finished as well for people who couldn't attend. So thank you, everybody. Great discussion.
Thank you, Ben. See you later.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Ah, Reinhardt, I see you.
Yes, so I couldn't see you for all the time, but I guess this was a fixed MCU layout.
Yes, apparently.